Turn to Proverbs 8:26. Proverbs 8 and verse 26. We're still in this part of Proverbs where wisdom is talking about how she was with God during the creation. And she says, "While as yet he had not made the earth, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world." So we'll take it piece by piece like usual. While as yet he had not made the earth. So of course wisdom is speaking here, as she has been for the whole chapter. She's continuing to explain how she was present with God before he created the earth, and then the oceans and the mountains. And she did that in 24, when she says, when there were no depths, I was brought forth, when there were no fountains abounding with water, so that's the oceans, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. And now she's continuing to say, to go on to talk about how she was with God. So before he made the earth, God possessed wisdom, which is what we saw there in verse 22. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way before his works of old, and he exalted wisdom at that time. Verse 23, I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. It's interesting. I mentioned to you how people use this passage to try to prove eternal generation of the Son of God. And some guy just this week emailed me, or left a comment on, must have been one of the eternal generation videos that I did, and said that Christ was eternally generated, and this is taught in Proverbs 8:22 and 23. And I just had finished this Bible study here a couple of weeks ago, so I sent him a link and I said, no, that's not the case. And I gave him a link to the sermons, and he just wrote back and said, yes, it is. I'm like, okay, well, that was a waste of time. I'm glad I didn't try to explain it to you. Yeah. So anyway. So yeah, there are definitely people out there that hold to that position. So since God used wisdom to create the earth, as we read in Proverbs 3:19, the Lord by wisdom hath founded the earth, by understanding hath he established the heavens, it follows then that wisdom was with him while as yet he had not made the earth. So she was with him before he had made the earth, in other words, because he used her to make it. Then she goes on to say, nor the fields. Now, we've basically been going through the creation account as we've been going through Proverbs chapter 8 here. Started off with the earth, and then the oceans, and then the mountains. And we see all that happening there pretty much in order in Genesis. And now we get to the fields, which happened on the third day of creation. If you go to Genesis 1:11-13. Now the field is not actually mentioned in these two verses, or in these three verses, but you'll see that clearly this is when God made the fields. Genesis 1:11, and God said, let the earth bring forth grass, you know where grass grows? In a field, right? The herb yielding seed, and the fruit yielding, and the fruit tree yielding fruit after his kind. And we'll read later about the trees of the field, whose seed is in itself upon the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, and herb yielding seed after his kind, and the tree yielding fruit, whose seed was in itself after his kind, and God saw that it was good, and the evening and the morning were the third day. So it was the third day that the Lord made the fields. First the earth, then the oceans at the same time, then the mountains, then the field. And God used his wisdom to design the grass and the fruit trees of the field. Now we look at grass and you think, oh, that wouldn't be any big deal. You try to design grass and see if it's a big deal. I mean, it's made up of DNA and all this other complex stuff. It doesn't look like it's very technical, but you try to figure that out. That would take a lot of wisdom to design grass.
And how many kinds is there?
Oh, I guess thousands. That's a good thing to look up. But even bamboo is a type of grass, I've been told. All kinds of grass. And, of course, the fruit trees. You got apple trees and orange trees and banana trees and, who knows how many thousands of different fruit trees there are. That would take a lot of wisdom to come up with something like that. And the purpose of creating the fields to have the grass and the trees in was ultimately to feed man, feed beast and man. Mm-hmm. So you remember that wisdom is the choice of means to find the best end or to accomplish the best end. So the means here is the grass and the trees. The end is to feed the animals and feed man. So God picked the best means, that is the fields, to make the grass, to make the trees and the fruit, to feed man. And we see that in Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 9. Ecclesiastes 5, 9. It says, he that loveth... No, that's not the right... That's 10. There we go. Verse 9. Moreover, the profit of the earth is for all. The king himself is served by the field. So this is referring to the food that comes out of the field. Even the king. Yeah. Right? He's just as dependent on the field as any peasant, any slave, anybody is. And then the Lord gave instruction to Israel in Deuteronomy 20 and verse 19 that when they would besiege a city and to try to conquer it, that they were allowed to chop down the trees of the field outside the city to make bulwarks and to make, you know, to use to get into the city. But they were not allowed to chop down the fruit trees because the fruit trees were for man's life. Deuteronomy 20. Verse 19. It says, when thou shalt besiege a city a long time in making war against it to take it, thou shalt not destroy the trees thereof by forcing an axe against them, for thou mayest eat of them, and thou shalt not cut them down, for the tree of the field is man's life, to employ them in the siege. And he goes on to say that he can cut down the other trees in the next verse that aren't for meat, that is for food. But you see that little parenthetical clause there, for the tree of the field is man's life. That's how man is sustained, by the trees of the field. And, you know, then the beasts are sustained by the grass of the field, which then man is sustained by. So really it was for their own benefit. I don't think the Lord was so much caring about the nation they were trying to conquer, but it was for their benefit. Don't chop down the apple trees. Eat the apples, right? Because you're going to need them when you're trying to besiege the city.
It's not because he cared so much about the environment.
No, because he let them chop the rest of them down. Yeah, trees are renewable, so the Lord's not too concerned about that. Though, we're not just supposed to be wasting the earth and just chopping stuff down for no reason. I mean, that's just foolish. But, but yeah, there's nothing wrong with chopping trees down. Then wisdom goes on to say, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. As a matter of fact, a lot of people are so against clear cutting, but I was told by my cousin, who's a forester, that sometimes the best thing for a forest is to clear cut it. Because when you don't clear cut it, then you end up, it doesn't grow up evenly again. And a lot of times some of the bad trees that you left there end up dominating the forest instead of when you just clear cut it. And then you let everything grow up, that naturally the best ones make it, and you end up with a lot healthier forest. It just looks ugly, but it's actually good for the forest to clear cut it.
Which kind of happens with a forest fire, in a way. I mean, it just wipes everything out, and then it starts over, and it looks bad for a long time.
That happened where I grew up. Pennsylvania is just thick, hardwood forest. Like, just, it's beautiful. Yeah, it's just trees like you haven't seen. Well, maybe you have, but... very, very thick forest everywhere. I was just looking at the farm where the little farming community that I grew up in. I was looking at it on the satellite the other day, and it is just, it's neat. I never thought about to look at it from the satellite, but it's like this whole, it's just nothing but forest. But there's this little round spot here of maybe 1,000 acres or something with five or six different farms, but just total forest, thick as can be everywhere else around it. And the whole countryside's like that. You'll see these little pockets, where you'll have fields that my great-grandparents cut them all down and used horses and dynamite and all that. But, yeah, just nothing but woods out there. Oh, but what I was going to say is that I didn't know this, but I guess that whole area burned a long time ago, back in the 1800s, I think, huge forest fire. And it was not hardwoods before that, but when it grew back hardwood. It was like, yeah, like mostly, I think, pine or hemlock or something before that. And then they said when it grew back hardwood. So, which is, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Okay, anyway, back to Proverbs 8 and verse 26. Wisdom says, nor the highest part of the dust of the world. So God's wisdom was brought forth before he created the highest mountains on earth, because he talked about the mountains in the previous verse there, in a previous verse there in 25. And even the very dust of the earth, from the deepest valleys to the toppest of the high, top of the highest mountains, was created by God in his infinite wisdom. And you think, well, dust would be pretty easy to create. Well, look at dust under the microscope. Look at dust. Get an electron microscope out, and you're going to see all kinds of amazing, complex things that you can't even comprehend in dust. Mm-hmm. It'd take a lot of wisdom to create dust, along with everything else that God created. Dust is earth, or other solid matter, in a minute and fine state of subdivision, so that the particles are small and light enough to be easily raised and carried in a cloud by the wind. Any substance comminuted?
Mm-hmm.
Comminuted or pulverized powder. So if you didn't know what dust is, you do now. A lot of dust comes from us, I've been told, from our skin flaking stuff off. And so anyway, when you get irritated with all that dust on your furniture, just know that's you on the furniture. It's a piece of you.
I was blaming the gravel roads.
That's probably part of it too. Now here's the interesting thing. Remember, wisdom is the choice of means to get to the end. Why did God create dust?
I looked ahead.
You looked ahead?
Yeah.
He created dust.
To make man.
To make man. Mm-hmm. See, man, he had to really think about that. I got to make dust first so I can make man out of dust. Mm-hmm. Genesis 2 and verse 7. That's all we are, is moist dust. Or dust mixed with about 78% water or something like that. Isn't it 78?
I don't know. Dust to dust, ashes to ashes, that's what I just think about.
Yeah.
When you were talking about that.
That saying is not actually in the Bible. Dust to dust is, Abraham said I'm dust and ashes, but the ashes to ashes is not. A lot of mm-hmm. people think it is. Mm-hmm. Genesis 2 and verse 7. And the Lord formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. Now, it may seem incredible to think that we're dust. Well, I don't look like dust. But, you know, when somebody dies and you leave him just lay there, or like an animal, you ever see an animal just lay there and dry out? And what's it turn into? Dust. That's it. And if we lay in the grave long enough, we'll turn into dust too. Worm poop first and then dust. So that takes care of Proverbs 8:26. Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.